start somewhere. It has to start sometime. What better place than here? What better time than now?
Hey guys, what's up? Welcome to the latest edition of the Radcast. Hey guys, what's up? It's Ryan Alford. Welcome to the latest edition of the Radcast. I am joined today by maybe the raddest of all rads. I don't know. It's up there. It's for sure up there, Jens. But Jens Nicolaisen, CMO and co-founder of Shinesty. What's up, brother?
Hey, man. Thank you guys so much for having me on.
Hey, you know, it's funny. On one of our most recent episodes, I had a guy on, and I was like, you know, the most appropriate name for a podcast might be Radcast for you guys. But now I'm going to throw it out. There can't be a more appropriate podcast for Shinesty than the Radcast.
Certainly not. I don't know if we can like self-proclaim being rad, but we'd like to think that we're rad.
Are you kidding me? That Hawaiian shirt, if that is what it is, if there's nothing radder than that shirt, and everything that is the boldest of bold brands that is Shinesty, very reverent, very cool, which we're going to get into, but loving everything from the brand. I know we talked about it pre-episode, but I've been in the vortex of Shinesty content down that rabbit hole, and it was hard to get out of it in my juvenile, little boy or old boy or whatever you want to call it. Maybe it's got a sense of humor, but it was fucking hilarious, dude.
Good. The strategy is working.
Yes, it is. It's definitely working. So Shinesty, so party wear, intimate wear, ball hammocks. I mean, you know, we got to go down that rabbit hole real fast, and that's, you know, we talked about
strong,
it.
Strong lead in, Ryan. Strong lead in.
Let's go right at it. I mean, it is like front and center when you hit the website. It's like, you know, no banana hammock, it's a ball hammock, people. Ball hammock.
Well, you know, we actually do have kind of a long and sometimes sordid history with banana hammocks as well. We started out selling, really like the initial like impetus for the company was, you know, apparel for all of life's social moments. And those were everything from, you know, swimming in the beach with your friends to the 4th of July to Christmas to Halloween to the Kentucky Derby and everything in between. We sell a lot of underwear and a lot more mainstream products like the shirt now. Our history is really rooted in those many of life's social moments. So.
Yeah. Do we have toga wear? You know, I was thinking like
toga wear. That's a good one, but is it more than? Is it just a sheet? I've been to plenty of toga parties, and it was always just how inexpensively can you buy a sheet at Walmart or Targets?
This is true. I guess that's like the first thing that came to mind when I think about it.
Have to write that down, though. That might be a challenge to our product team.
How do we make you right? Look, it. How long has toga parties needed like some secondary additions to the lineup? You know.
Ryan, where the hell have you been all our lives? Why aren't you over here working for us?
Hey, we can talk about that later. I know you guys keep things in-house, but maybe we can go out of house, you know. If nothing else, you might can hire me for free just because of how fucking cool the brand is. So I might just want it on the resume that I had, like, you know, 0.10 ideas for Shinesty.
As long as you don't mind being compensated in underwear with a ball hammock inside of them.
Oh,
ball hammock pouch inside of them.
Dude, wear it with pride. Wear it with pride. So, Jens, let's talk a little bit about you, your background, what led you to Shinesty, what led to, you know, we've talked about a little bit the event wear, party event wear, but let's give a little bit of the origins here.
Totally. Well, I studied marketing in college, and I guess I'm maybe one of those rare individuals that actually does what they studied, although I would say what I do now is very – it does not exactly resemble what you studied in school, or at least when I went back when I was in school. But right out of school – well, actually, my interest in marketing kind of stemmed from just consumer behavior and psychology in general, and I really saw marketing as kind of like the business outlet for that, where depending on how you price things, depending on how you – position things, depending on the way the creative communicates with individuals, you can actually change their behavior. So that really fascinated me. And out of school, I got into management consulting, basically with a emphasis in marketing. And that was primarily working for very large brands, the like Nestle portfolio, the Coca-Cola portfolio, the Pernod Ricard portfolio, and the list kind of goes on and on and on and on from there. And that was really great. You get to see how a lot of big brands are built, how, you know, big businesses are managed and run, but you don't really get to see like kind of the modern ecosystem of digital marketing. You didn't really get to, didn't get a lot of exposure to like the digitally native brands that, you know, we're part of now. Yep. And if I had kind of like one, you know, regret while I was in management consulting is that like at the end of the day, you kind of pass off a strategy and a recommendation and you don't ever get to see it through to completion. And what I really loved about my time at Chinesty is that, you know, we've gotten to learn all these things. We manage everything in-house. That's going to be probably a big theme of everything we talk about here. But we really got to see, you know, at Chinesty, we really get to see where the rubber hits the road and how things are actually built from the ground up, versus basically that, basically a project stopping at a, you know, big report and then that's it. You kind of hope that someone takes your recommendation and does something with it.
Well, yeah, we have that in common. I will say that, having worked with a lot of large brands at the agency over my years, that was always a little bit of frustration. There were some projects where, you know, and some clients where they really involved you down to the ground level of, okay, here's the sales, here's how it is. But I mean, I don't know about you, but I don't know how many projects or how many clients I've worked with where, you know, they're paying us big money. These are huge product launches. And like we do some part of it and you might see a report, but you don't ever really feel and see all of the elements and all of the ups and downs and the sales and the you know, much less the all the digital metrics that might be there. But it that was always frustrating.
No, and you never really know if the success of like an idea or the failure of an idea is because of the idea itself or if it was because of the execution. And that's exactly. Probably another reason, like, when we have good ideas, we like to, you know, think that we're probably the best people in most cases to actually bring them to life. For that reason, most functions, most channels, and everything that we've done have all been built and managed in house. So.
Yeah, I love that. So, the origins of Chinesty, though, were, you know, party wear, and you know, didn't ever want to give that up.
That's right. Yeah, my business partner and I got to give a lot of credit to him. This was kind of his original brainchild. But we had a similar experience in college where we were both like, we love going to theme parties and events. Now we're graduated though. So like, time to get rid of our party closet. Party stops here. Let's join the real world, get jobs and, you know, be grownups. And fortunately for everyone in college listening to this, that's not true. The party does go on. It doesn't matter if you're 21 fresh out of college, you know, 30 with your first kid or 65 and retired, people party through their whole life. And so that's kind of a big learning for us. We really thought this was going to be like a young professional kind of brand, people who had a little more disposable income but didn't have the time to go out and find cool apparel for all of life's social moments. But fortunately, we realized like, actually, no, people have a need for this across their whole life. And for that reason, the market is much bigger than we ever imagined. And so, yeah, we really got started by like, if that's kind of the impetus for the products, we wanted to create these really like cool, irreverent products for all of life's social moments, whether that's, again, Christmas, St. Patrick's Day, 4th of July, or all, you know, tailgates. The list goes on and on and on. And we kind of created product lines around all these big events. And we were kind of like thinking about the products and we're like, you know what, this is like, if these products are going to be pretty extra, like the brand should be really in your face. It should be irreverent. It should be snarky. It should be sarcastic. It should be polarizing, just like the products are. And in a lot of ways, that was kind of a reaction to a lot of the brands that were, you know, becoming big at the time online that, you know, looked really clean. They're sophisticated, you know, they're run well in a lot of cases. But they all are kind of like serious and like minimalist. And we were like, no, let's actually like kind of flip the script and be maximalist, basically. Like, let's be in your face. Let's be very different than all those brands with just like this kind of copy and paste aesthetic. And I think that's certainly helped us stand out. I certainly think we are polarizing as a result, but that's one of the biggest reasons for our success overall, I would say. Our marketing philosophy in general is to entertain first and sell second. And so we really hope that comes through in everything that we do. And we kind of consider it a badge of honor, actually, like to be actually polarizing. If we get some blowback from what we're doing, that probably means that we kind of towed the line and went just far enough, because we like to think that like brands in the middle, brands that like barely kind of aren't appealing in a really, really, really strong way to anyone are dying or just will never, ever stand out. So in order to really, really appeal to some people, we think you kind of got to like alienate some people along the way. And that way, you know, you've really landed with an audience.
Oh, yeah. Okay, a lot to unpack there. But I'm going to start with this key insight, people. We got a lot of people, startup brands, middle brands, CEOs at large companies that listen to the Radcast. But this is the hallelujah, amen that I want to highlight. Entertain first, sell second. No matter what brand you are, wherever you are, however you are, if I had an amen button, amen. I'm hitting it right there. Because that is the key to marketing your branding in 2021. And you don't have to be selling ball sack hammocks or whatever it is. I'm adding hyperbole here. To be entertaining, you can be a lawyer, a doctor, a pharmacist, insert profession here, entertain first, sell second. Hey, that should be in the Bible playbook of commerce in 2021.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm really glad you pointed that out. I mean, clearly we think of that, and our version of entertainment is through comedy. I think for a lot of brands, that is just not going to be the way they entertain people. You can entertain people through other types of content, though. You can educate people. There's a lot of other ways to add value that are not comedy, which is probably what we'll continue to talk about. But if you think about it from just a sheer practicality of, like, as a consumer, there's a rule. I think I'm pretty sure it's 3%, but it's some percent, and it's some small single digits number. That is like at any time, only 3% of a market are actually like in need of a product. And that was like especially true for us. In fact, I think if you're selling a denim print banana hammock, the market is probably even a lot smaller than 3%. And yes. So we kind of figured we needed a way to keep communicating and engaging with customers when they didn't need our products, because the chances that they needed some like really out there, you know, full pattern Christmas suit or denim printed banana hammock or whatever it was really, really, really small. So we needed a way to keep people engaging with the brand, to keep them opening emails, watching our ads, even if they didn't need that product at that time, because most of those have a really specific time and place that doesn't happen every single day or every single weekend.
Ding, 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 ding. Attention is fleeting. You need to keep your customers' attention at all times as much as you can, so that when they do need your product, they're still around or they have a reason to be around. Because what happens is, in today's world, people are so brand unloyal. You know, they follow the needs and where attention is. And so they forget about you. That's where people forget. They're like so busy acquiring new customers. But how do we keep the attention and the leverage with the clients that we already have? This is like a masterclass in marketing already.
Well, thank you. No, I mean, I'm glad you happened upon that. It couldn't be truer, and it's I think what's made us be so successful to date. So.
I will say this. So, just speaking from personal observation over the years, back to the party themes and all that, it's such an insight too, because my wife and all of her friends, we do a supper club. And every one of them is themed. Now, they're not toga themed. Amazing. Or whatever, but we do them. They're all themed. Like, we had the Winter Wonderland party. Like, we had all this stuff. And it snowed. It never snows in South Carolina. It snowed on the day we did. But I was like, we called that in. But the insight, though, that people, as girls, guys, kids, boys, girls, this isn't like one or the other. People love fucking themed parties. They love that shit. They die. They want to get dressed up. They want to have fun. They want to release from the everyday world, and people still love all that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's like universal. Like, people love getting together, and there's certainly like, if you add a theme to it, you add this like layer to the onion that makes the whole event more fun. You got to plan for it. When you're actually there, it's a lot more fun. So, you know, that was a pretty critical insight and a pretty critical thing that needed to come together for this to be a business at all. And, you know, that was the first, basically, 4 years of this business was just kind of scaling through these types of events and releasing new products, new prints for those events. Only in like the more, you know, recent couple of years has it really shifted towards product lines that have a lot more like mainstream lifestyle appeal. But yeah, we really, really thought this was just going to be like a young professional or college aged audience. And then we were like totally surprised when like 30-year-olds, 40-year-olds, 50-year-olds, 60-year-olds were buying, and actually it was a really pretty broad audience, much broader than we ever could have imagined.
I love it. So talk about maybe the innovation cycle for you guys. Like, how do you, you know, whether it's product, whether it's marketing, we'll go broad in the innovation sense, but what's that process like for you guys? Like, obviously you have a very modern, irreverent, fun brand. In many ways, you know, you think, well, that makes it easy to be innovative, all that, but not necessarily. I'd love to know how that product development, marketing development, you know, just that innovation cycle for you guys, how you guys stay fresh.
That's a great and loaded question.
I know there's a lot there. Could have been 7 questions, but I like to put them all into one.
Just put them all out there.
Yeah, so you can answer it as you flows naturally.
20-minute string of words follows. You know, the way we've done it is probably different than a lot of others would do it. At the very beginning, like, we couldn't afford to create huge product lines for tons and tons of events that, you know, had shirts and shorts and underpants and jackets and swim trunks in them. Like, if you think about all these themes, Christmas, 4th of July, sorry, that's grotesque. I've got a huge blister on my hand for everyone watching the video.
No worries.
You guys are going to have to cut that out. You got all these themes, right? All these different times throughout the year. And then you got all these different product types. And if you think about the quantity of combinations, it's basically impossible for, like, a young, you know, largely bootstrapped or friends and family, or, you know, with a little bit of friends and family money to go out and test in all of these product categories. So we started with vintage clothing, and that allowed us to test a lot of different product types across a lot of different themes. And from there, we were kind of able to triangulate around which, you know, combinations of those got the most interest from people. And even though we couldn't sell, you know, over and over, like, tons and tons of USA windbreakers, for instance, because they're all vintage, they were all one off, we were able to track other signals behind the scenes, like how many people lingered on that product, how many people tried to add it to cart, even though it was out. So we could start to figure out which products had the most mass appeal on our site. From there, you know, we started either white labeling products or buying dead stock products to be able to sell more and more. And then we started to be able to actually develop our own private label line. And today the site is, you know, 99% products that are designed and manufactured in-house. So that's kind of like the earliest days of product innovation. From there, it's really become kind of two-part. One, we're trying to think about, like, what are large market areas where there is kind of no, where either there's limited product differentiation and our brand can stand out, or where, I guess that really is it. Like, everything we're trying to do is figure out, hey, can we apply our, you know, irreverent, unique brand to large categories, whether that's apparel or maybe in the future, not apparel. Because we really see our creative, our content, as the biggest differentiator. And obviously we're going to create amazing products along the way, but we're kind of trying to identify large market segments in order to really inform where we, you know, put all of our product development time and all of our marketing creative efforts.
Where does the creative inspiration come from? I mean, what is it?
That's a great question too. I mean, this brand and all the creative we put out would not be possible, and it would not work without the people internally. It comes from everybody that works at the brand, who loves what the brand stands for, who, you know, believes in our mission to force the world to take itself less seriously. And so we're always trying to think about, like, you know, at the end of the day, if we're going to market a product, it has to solve a need of the customer. And there are probably product features and benefits that make those, that actually solve those problems. So those need to be communicated, but the way you communicate them can be really, really irreverent. And the more irreverent we've made things, the more it tends to stand out from 99.9% of other advertisers out there that are pitching their products in, like, boring, generic ways. And so our kind of, like, mission with all of our content, all of our creative, really is to entertain first, sell second. And those two things really go hand in hand, because people are inherently drawn towards entertainment. They're inherently drawn towards comedy. It's a positive emotion. And then if you're actually appealing to them because they have a, you know, a problem or a need to be solved, and a product that can authentically fulfill that need, you've got a winning recipe.
Yeah.
it's going to take off.
Absolutely. Talking with Jens Nicolaysen, CMO and co-founder of Shinesty. You can find them online. You can Google them at Shinesty. Shine, S-T-Y. Yeah, man, there's a lot to unpack there as well. It's like, I can't think of, like, everything now is so damn PC. Everything is so serious. Like, totally. It's like, I'm exhausted. Like, that was part of the beat going down the vortex with you guys. It's like, well, it's kind of like, you know, I've been dying to see, like, another Happy Gilmore, like, Adam Sandler, like, just silly movie. Like, they don't make that shit anymore. And it's like, when I went down the content rabbit hole with you guys, I was like, you know, I was like, this was like tension relief or something, you know? Like, it's like, has there ever been the right brand at the right time to, like, kind of, like, cut through? I think you guys are nailing it.
Well, really appreciate that. It's definitely something we try to hang our hat on. It's not easy to have a strategy like that. You got to, like, really be continuously pushing creative. It means you're going to, like, alienate people. So if you ever take a strategy like that, you got to be able to say, like, we know this isn't for everyone, but nothing is. Like, so few things are for everyone that I think it's a much more inherent strategy to take than try to appeal to everyone. And I think it's one of those things that it's a risk. If it's not done authentically, it's going to go down in flames. So, but if you think you can do it authentically, if you think you've got a repeatable content and brand strategy, it can help you stand out, because I said 99.9% of brands and businesses do not take that approach.
Yeah, I'd say 99 point, if there's another number there, like 9999, you know. Absolutely. But let's talk a little bit of nuts and bolts of marketing. You know, what's worked for you guys? What's the bread and butter? You know, I dare say, if we can, you know, there's very little secret sauce anymore necessarily in marketing tactics. It's more the creative and the brand that you've built that makes it stand out. But maybe talk about some of those nuts and bolts, like what you guys lean on for telling the story.
Yeah, well, you said it really well. First off, creative underpins everything we do, because it is the biggest point of differentiation today in digital marketing. The things that work for us tend to be the things that work for most businesses selling online. You got search, paid and organic. You got CRM, email, SMS, that type of thing. You've got direct mail. You've got paid ads, paid social, organic social. It's the things that tend to work for everyone that work for us for a reason. And you also said this really astutely, like, there's not a lot of secret sauce to those things at this point. Like, the management of those channels it's not totally formulaic, like, but there is a tried and true process out there. And if you get the right person in the right seat, they'll do a great job managing that channel. And then it's really the creative and the product that has to keep you standing out on those channels. To really sum this up, we operate probably the same channels that 99.9% of other digitally native direct consumer brands do. And we run them really well, I think. Otherwise, we wouldn't have been able to get to this, you know, scale that we're at. But the reason we've been so successful on those is truly because of our creative and our product that stands out.
Yeah, and it certainly does. But how, talk about, you know, maybe some more of the channels. Like, is, you know, TikTok's growth, it strikes me as maybe the right platform for you, or maybe not. I'm not sure. Like, at first it'd be like, oh, you guys are on TikTok, yeah, you're young and you're, but, you know, like you said, they're older. So I could go either way on this, but what's been the TikTok strategy? Has it been something you're just kind of still testing, or is it like something that's a real needle mover for you guys?
It's not really something that we put a lot of time and effort into yet, candidly.
Yeah.
I will say, like, there's a lot of these things that come up, and TikTok does look like it is going to be a platform with real staying power. But I think there's a really, you know, delicate balance that, at least businesses like us, we don't have like unlimited resources. We haven't raised a ton of money. We have a pretty lean marketing team, all things considered. And so I think there's real cost benefit that goes into diverting your focus to kind of explore nascent channels versus putting that time and effort into the ones that are really driving effort today. It's a delicate balance of how much you invest in these platforms. And sometimes there's a real first mover advantage, and sometimes like the algorithms and the paid side of it are just not developed enough to have it really reap disproportionate returns for the level of effort. And that same level of effort could get you a lot farther put into a more established channel. That said, will we go there? Yes. Mm-hmm. Will we like figure out what it's going to do? Yes. Have we? No, not yet.
Yeah. Well, you just very well spoke what I call and recommend to a lot of people, that 80-20 rule. Like 80% of your business is probably coming from 20% of the available channels out there. And you're funneling where your audience is now and where you're getting and diverting, you know, energy, which is both engage, I call marketing energy, both, you know, yes, sales is part of that, but engagement energy and overall brand depth, and then of course the revenues. And so it sounds like you're being strategically focused, which is smart. But I'm envisioning, because I've been delving, we've been really digging in on TikTok. I can see it. I can see that coming for your future. It might open up even another channel for you guys. But the time will come.
I think it's all just about, you know, exploring those things at the right time for the business. And like, I like caution a lot of entrepreneurs and a lot of marketers to like, don't drop everything just to do the next new thing and the next new thing. Like, you should, you know, you got to zoom out, you got to look at your business, you got to look at your biggest opportunity, and you got to realize everyone for the most part has limited resources. And so you got to use those limited resources to get you the most impact, you know, now and into the future. So
how do you guys go about thinking about e-com? Like, obviously that's where your sales are happening. I'm not aware of an in-store store. I mean, you guys are 100% e-com, right?
Yeah, I mean, like 99.
I know you do some of the events and things like that when, you know, the monster that's COVID wasn't around, but I'm sure that'll come back. But Shopify, our Shopify platform?
Yep.
Yeah, been happy with that. Any ups, downs, sideways recommendations for any entrepreneurs out there just on the kind of direct e-commerce side of the business?
It's a great platform. You know, they're always like getting things together and learning how to be a better, you know, better platform for the largest retailers that are on there. You know, if you're just starting out, it's a great platform. The more you scale, the more you try to push the bounds of it, that's when you kind of, you know, tend to feel those limitations disproportionately. But they're doing a lot. Yeah. They're doing a lot. And we've been generally really happy on them. So I would highly recommend it.
Yeah, we're a shop. I didn't mean to like set you up, but you explained it perfectly. We're a Shopify partner, and about 85% of the companies come to us. We push them there, no matter where they are, their product stays. There's always a chance, like some good Magento, we need a custom solution or things like that, or just custom built. But it seems to really assist with a lot of the blocking and tackling of e-com. So, just curious.
I think. You think about the brands that got started on Shopify and how lean they've been able to be from like a development standpoint. Like, people used to have to hire, you know, huge engineering teams, database architects, and just to have a site. And, you know, Shopify has done so much to just and some others have done a lot to just democratize that and make it so easy to get up and running and test the product market fit without having tons and tons of expensive overhead to do it.
What's the anything on the horizon for Shinesty, whether it's marketing, content, product lines, anything, you know, kind of in your, you know, things you can talk about?
Yeah, this really relates back to your question before about like product development too. So now that we've, you know, built a 7-figure customer base, we have a lot of ability to think like, you know, you can put new products out to them and test it a lot easier than, you know, starting a business, a new product where you only have paid avenues, for instance. Yep. So a lot of what we're doing is looking at that customer base and thinking what peripheral need, like what is the composition of that customer base based on different product types or themes or whatever you want, however you want to break it down. And then, you know, it's pretty easy for us to see like, okay, these are the big groups of people, these are the big products they buy. And then to start to think about really deep about peripheral products that they also need. If someone likes our underwear, can we put that technology in swim trunks or shorts? Can we help them, you know, get their balls cleaner? Those types of things are just ideas of where we're going.
I love that. And another masterclass of marketing here. Everyone, this is why you build first party data. This is why you build your customer base, because growing and acquiring customers is expensive and time consuming. And it takes a lot of time. And once you get to scale with your customer base, like you guys have, it gives you a lot of ability, not only with product development, but with remarketing, with lifetime value. There's so many things that become at your call when you've developed that, you know, that database.
Totally. Once you have a like active and voracious audience and you just, you know, put new things in front of them that they expressly need or they didn't even know they needed, it you know, the flywheel effect is really real. And any entrepreneur starting out, like, it's so easy to just think about acquisition because at the beginning, that's where like most of your scale and success is going to come from and quickly. But if you're ignoring the long-term proposition of what's going to keep your customers engaged, you are never going to achieve profitability and you're never going to have real staying power. So.
That's right. So what's the long tail for Jens? I mean, like, just riding this train, like, any, personal or professional goals out there?
Yeah, that's a really big question. You know, I'm a new father. I've got a, you know, 16-month-old, so I'm learning how to be, you know, how to continue growing this business and putting my all into it while also, you know, being a new dad, which is an amazing experience. A lot of learnings, a lot of trials and tribulations, but certainly an amazing and deeply fulfilling thing. But yeah, I mean, we've got, every time we've reached a new stage of success at Chinesty, we've realized, wow, there's even more out there to come and more out there to come. And every time you kind of hit a new one of these like levels of success, it just becomes in some ways harder, but in other ways easier to just see the next stage and see the next stage. So I think we've got a long way to go. I think we've got a lot of exciting product lines. I think we've done the hardest thing to do, which is prove that people love our brand and our philosophy around it. And now that we've proven that out, we think it'll be a lot easier to kind of copy and paste other categories.
Love it, man. Where can everybody keep up with everything Chinesty and Jens?
Pretty much every platform is going to be at Chinesty Threads. And you can keep up with me. I'm on LinkedIn. If I can help anybody out, please shoot me a message. Jens, J-E-N-S, Nicolaysen, N-I-C-O-L-A-Y-C-N. Pardon me. There's not a lot of them on LinkedIn. So.
Sweet, man. It's been great. I dig the brand, man. I'm digging everything you guys are doing. You're doing a masterclass in marketing for how to engage, how to entertain, and how to keep your customer base and acquire new customers through entertainment, not selling. Love it, brother. Hey, man.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Yeah, man. It's been awesome. You know where to keep up with Chinesty. He just told you where that is what you want to be doing with your brand. You may not be irreverent, but you need to stand out. It's more important than ever. This is Ryan Alford. You know where to find us, theradcast.com, at the.rad.cast. And I'm everywhere at Ryan Alford. And on TikTok, I'm verified at ryan.alford. Go look, find, search, keep up with all things radical marketing. We'll see you next time on the Radcast.